Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So Naomi Osaka is a two-time Australian Open champion, a four-time Grand Slam champion. She's a woman that hasn't lost a tennis match in over a year. That's a 21-match winning streak. She is, as David said pretty early on in our daily Australian Open podcast, setting herself apart, if not having already set herself apart from the rest of the field. I think the fact that she's not the world number one right now is more about the rankings than it is about Naomi Osaka, because she is the very best female tennis player in the world right now, by some margin, I would say, David, and a very worthy Australian Open champion.
Oh, yeah, she really is. And I find it quite interesting. We'll talk about the match in a little while, but I find it quite interesting that when we came to do our picks for the title at the start of the tournament, I am usually somebody who gets scared off by a draw, to be quite honest. I'll often see a difficult half and I'll think, I'm staying away from that. And yet, with her, I looked through all the players that she could come up against, and she just gives you the confidence that she can handle them. And I know she almost lost to Garbiñe Muguruza, but the theme that has become apparent throughout the last 2 weeks is the ruthless manner in which she finishes things. And she's such a combination, because she's so sweet to listen to and so disarming and interesting and lovable. And yet she is a killer on the court in tennis terms. In terms of finishing a match, there is no mercy. It is just get the job done. And that's adding on to a range of skills and physical ability that is the standard now.
Matt, she was described by Russ Bengtsson, who seems to be the sort of chap that we would all get on with, as a little kitten who eats people.
Yes, I loved that tweet. Yeah, and she's someone who says what she means. She told us at the start of the tournament, I like a tough draw. She told us she's improved her returns. She's improved her returns. She told us she doesn't think that people remember runners-up and she wants to win. And she keeps winning these finals.
Bad news for Jenny Brady, that.
Yeah, and, you know, when someone keeps winning, it can sometimes get less interesting. I think with Osaka, the opposite is true. The more she wins, the more interesting it gets, the more interesting she gets, the more interesting she makes the sport. And, you know, we've said that this was the slam in which she set herself apart. It feels like each slam that she's won has been defined by something. You know, her first one was her breakthrough. Her second one was her backing that up. Her third one was so tied with her off-court activism. And the fourth one, this one, was her setting herself apart. And I'm just so excited to find out what she does next. That's the feeling I'm left with watching Osaka and having her win all these things. What's next?
Yeah, and we're going to have a big speculative chat about that. And she was quite happy to get into that speculation in her press conference afterwards. And as you can imagine, she gave great quotes about pretty much everything she was asked about. It was an absolute joy. But we should probably talk about the match first, David. I mean, 6-4, 6-3. Who on earth could have predicted that scoreline?
Not me. I went for the Hail Mary. I think about 80 points to try to make up in the standings. So I went for a Brady in three to try and get a big 100 in one go. Didn't work out, as you can tell. But I mean, I thought Brady came out and had a right old go, really threw what she had. She wasn't as consistent and solid and reliable as she was in that match in New York. I think she's done really well to reach the final in spite of being a little bit erratic at times. But she was right in there in that first set. She had some chances before Osaka really got going, you know, before she absolutely put her foot on the gas and shot off into the distance. I think Brady will probably have some frustration tonight over what happened. But once Osaka had got herself going, I mean, the way she just pulls away from you and withstands what you've got and makes you pay, it's that's what's special about her above all. I mean, she went a set and four love up, and I thought Brady did a great job to keep fighting and blasting away and deciding she's just going to go for broke and make the score respectable in that second set. I'm really glad for her that happened, because it would be horrible to be standing there with zero games in the second set. But even despite all that, Osaka gets into the position she needs. She never panics. There's never a flicker that this is not going to happen for her, and she wins the last 4 points of the match yet again.
Yeah, it's easy to kind of already start rewriting history and think 6-4, 6-3, Naomi Osaka, 21 match winning streak, four-time Grand Slam champion. You know, it was always inevitable. She was always going to win that match. But at 4-all, or up until 4-all in the first set, it really was a match, wasn't it? It was a match that Naomi Osaka was never not the favourite for, but it was a competitive match. That moment when Brady hit the lob and celebrated like she did, arms aloft, a little bit Daniil Medvedev style. I thought, you go on, Jen. This was back in the times when we thought we were calling her Jen. More news on that later. And I thought, yeah, great. You're probably still going to lose, but this is great. And then Osaka wins the next six games and somebody prematurely edits her Wikipedia page. at 6-4, 4-love. Her Wikipedia page was edited to describe her as a four-time Grand Slam champion. Then she loses the next game and the Wikipedia page reverts to its previous form.
I did briefly wonder whether Wikipedia had got a feed of this match in the future or something. I didn't know about.
Could have been the biggest jinx of all time, that.
Yeah. But I'm not imagining that, am I? It was a competitive match for a while there.
Yeah. My feeling was that both players were quite nervous at the start. Osaka obviously got out to a break lead and then gave it back straight away, and they were struggling a little bit. Neither was quite playing their best at the start. The conditions were tricky. It was quite breezy on court. And then for four or five games, I thought Brady was arguably the better player in that first set. The way she was hitting her backhand really caught me off guard. I think it perhaps caught Osaka off guard, who was really targeting it. But Brady was responding with some really great backhands.
I think Osaka kind of played her in on the backhand because she was hitting pretty much every ball there.
Yeah. And then we reached that pivotal stage of the match, which was the end of the first set, as you said, included that incredible point from Brady where she sort of ran the distance, the length of the court, and hit the lob over Osaka and did that celebration. But I think we saw the difference between them in those couple of games. Osaka is an experienced big match player, and when she needs it, she can find her best tennis. And 4-all, love 30, Osaka serving, second serve, Brady missed a forehand return. And then on the break point that she did eventually get in that game, Osaka hit a forehand winner. And then serving at 4-5, Brady had a game point to take it to 5-all, made some errors. And then when she was facing a set point of her own, Brady, she hit a forehand into the net. It was quite a bad unforced error. And then, as you said, Osaka just took the match away from her at the start of that second set. I was reminded of that quote that I think is a Yogi Berra quote that I've heard via Mary Carrillo, that it got late early. And it had been a very tight match, and then suddenly Osaka accelerated, and she was only two games away from winning. And it almost happened without you really noticing. And I think it's one of the shames that they only play best of three in these women's finals, but it's also a measure of what Osaka can do to you. She has an ability to surge ahead. We've seen it all tournament, and she did that to Brady today. Brady did well to make it tight again in that second set, but it kind of felt over at that point to me.
At the risk of sounding like a total dunce, did you just profoundly quote Yogi Bear?
No. Yogi Berra.
I don't know who that is, but let's all admit that that sounds a lot like Yogi Bear.
He was a baseball player.
Right.
I'm now very worried I've got his name wrong.
I'm British. I don't follow baseball.
It's all
no
great,
Yogi
though.
Bear is, though. My God.
I like the quote. I'm going with
it. It's a
great
quote. Just didn't necessarily sound like something Yogi Bear would have said, hence the query. I had a real tennis relived moment in the speeches afterwards, just to focus on Jennifer.
I know what you're going to say.
Brady.
Yeah.
Afterwards, when she was told, I think more than once, well, you're definitely going to be here again, and you're definitely going to win Grand Slams. And, you know, she was a worthy finalist today. It's not a flash in the pan. Semi-finalist at the US Open. And, you know, given her lack of experience, she performed well today. There's no sense of her, I'm not suggesting she didn't belong there, but the assumptive, not sure that's a word, statements that you'll be back here, you will definitely win slams. I think someone even said you'll win the next one or something.
it was a very definitive, the next time you're here, you will win.
Yes, the next time you're here, you will win it. And I thought, well, not if it's Naomi Osaka again.
I'd
probably
been feeding
no
that
one's
into his
going
earpiece
to.
When he said that.
And I know, you know, we've done enough Tennis Relived, we've watched enough of those ceremonies to know you have to say something like that. But I felt a bit icky and eerie when it was said, sort of haunted by all those times we've seen it said, and feeling like a sort of reverse foreshadowing.
The quote that strikes me as the accurate one in that ceremony is, I knew she was going to be a lot of trouble, from Naomi Osaka about Jennifer Brady after that semi-final.
Almost a Taylor Swift quote.
because she is. I mean, she's a draw disruptor. She's not necessarily the one that you circle as, unless you're me, as somebody who's going all the way. But because there are so many others. That's the problem. There are so many of these really top draw players now. I mean, yes, Osaka feels like she's separating herself, but the pack is so full of talented players. This is not a dud era. This has got the makings of an all-time era right up there, of a pool of players, all of whom are richly talented, different, and want it. But I do think she can be a factor for years to come. I don't know whether she's going to be winning any Grand Slams, really. I don't know whether she is. I wouldn't confidently state that. But I think she can contend on clay and on hard courts for, if she can keep her health for several years, because she does look the business. It's just that there are other players that have more of an X factor about their ability, their set. You know, if I think of Andreescu and Świątek, I feel those two and Osaka just have something, a gear shift, that when they're really on, when they're absolutely on, I don't see that Brady can answer that. And I don't think hardly any of the others can answer that. I mean, Barty's got some of that too. But I think there's a little bit of a question mark over the mental strength in the tightest moments for Barty. I mean, she's won a Grand Slam. That would suggest that she'll be fine. But we'll see in the years to come. That's what I love about this era. That we're going to learn a lot.
I thought Brady said something very nice in her post-match press conference, where she was asked, what do you need to do to win a slam, basically? And she said, I need to keep improving my game so that I get to the point where I don't have to play great tennis to win. I just have to play well enough to win. And I think that was bang on, because for me, it felt like she had to absolutely peak today and hit her ceiling to match Osaka, who wasn't playing at her absolute ceiling. Osaka's baseline level is higher than Brady's. And I think that is so often the case, isn't it? It's very rare that you can play your best all the time. And for Brady, if she can just bring in those margins a little bit and have a slightly more reliable sort of B game, that will help her in those big matches where she doesn't feel like she really has to play her best when she's nervous. And I think, you know, that's probably a good thing for her to aim for. That feels achievable, that she can do that. Whether it's enough, let's see. But I liked that as a goal.
It's such a misnomer about coaching and training, isn't it? You don't practice to improve your best level. You practice to improve your average level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of players talk in the past, haven't we, about how you rarely have a day where it all works and it all feels good. You know, I can't remember who it was who said it to us.
I think I've heard it from Martina Navratilova and Joe Drury are the two that stick out
Joe
for me.
Joe Drury definitely
says that a lot, and it chimes every time. Mm. And yet also every time it strikes me how infrequently that is said.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that until she said that. I did not know that tennis players most of the time don't feel like they're playing their best tennis or really good tennis, you know, the tennis that they're completely happy with. I love that revelation, really, for people who aren't tennis players like me, who just don't know that. That's such an interesting insight.
Mm. Well, speaking of revelations, David, Naomi Osaka, she wins the title, she celebrates, they set up the stage for the presentation. She steps up to give her speech and she seeks clarification just before she pays tribute to her beaten opponent. She seeks clarification on what Jennifer Brady likes to be called. Is it Jen? Is it Jennifer? It's the question on everybody's lips at this moment in time. And she replies, Jenny. Unexpected for everyone. And Naomi Osaka proceeds to call her Jennifer.
There are two queries. Did she actually say Jenny, or did she say any is fine? Is that what she said? That's one query, because I did read that.
If you come up with that theory, or is that circulating?
I read that in response to people remarking on this conversation and saying she might have said, they didn't say it with categorically, they said she might have said any. And I thought, well, that could be, because I heard it as Jenny. I thought that's what she said too. But the other thing, look, I don't think Naomi Osaka's listened to that and said, well, screw you, I'll call you what I want. I think she, I think she's probably just not quite heard her. You know, if she did say Jenny, I think she just didn't quite catch that.
We've all been there, haven't we?
So
yeah, you can't ask again. It's better just to get it wrong.
Yeah. But I mean,
right.
You know,
so what do we proceed with calling her?
Oh, well, I'm going with Jen. I mean,
right. One thing we know she didn't say.
Yeah. Well, I've heard other people call her that, you know.
Okay. Matt, what?
No, I'm calling her Jennifer because I mean, look, actually, seriously for a moment, I don't call tennis players by nicknames or generally speaking, I call them by the name that is written down. Because
me too, unless they ask to be called something different.
Yeah,
for example, a year or so ago, somebody clarified with Zverev, didn't they, what he wanted to be called, and he said Alex or Alexander.
Yeah. I've never called him Sasha because I don't know him. I haven't had it absolutely confirmed to me that that's what he wants to be called, and that's not what's written on the screen or in any of the books or anything like that. So I'm going to call him those things.
But equally, Stan Wawrinka asks to be Stan. In fact, that has subsequently changed in the official ATP guide and everything, but it used to be Stanislas.
And Andy Murray asked to be called Andy and not Andrew. Because the first commentary that Tony Adamson ever did on him and on Five Live when he beat George Bastl in 2005, you hear game, set, match, Andrew Murray. And actually, Tony, to be fair to him, also said, I think I have just seen a Wimbledon champion, which is a wonderful line. You know, going out on a limb, but he got it right.
Wow. Let's find out whether he thinks Jen Brady will win the next Grand Slam final she's in. Jennifer Brady. Jenny Brady. Oh, God.
She said any, so it's fine.
Any is fine. Okay. what about Naomi Osaka then? I mean, there's so many records here, or certainly like interesting statistical lines, all of which Matt has come up with. She's the first woman since Monica Seles to win all four of her first Grand Slam finals.
That's a great one, isn't it? That's
the reverse Andy Murray.
That's one that definitely stops you in your tracks a little bit.
an open era stat.
Yes.
And then there's, if you take the men in the open era, the only other man who's done that is Federer. So she's in the company in the open era of just Seles, Federer, and Osaka. Seles won her first six, Federer his first seven. So
ludicrous. She's won her last 41 Grand Slam matches after winning the first set. The last one she lost after winning the first set was at the French Open in 2016.
The moment when we were going through that first set, I did hope Brady would win it, not just for my prediction, but also just because I thought, this is how we get a match out of this. I also think shows how well Brady did to win the second set in their US Open match. Mm. But I feel like Osaka has moved on again since then.
She showed
something else this fortnight that she didn't show that fortnight. I mean, there she was having to do these incredible escapology feats, the likes of which we saw against Muguruza. But it's what stands out to me just as much as that is the way she just closed matches out. I mean, that's the sort of thing that the greats on the all-time list, that's what they have.
When she does lose a Grand Slam final, or lose even in the second week of a slam, which she's never done before, or lose from a setup, maybe lose from a setup in the second week of a slam, is it going to shake her to her core because she's so unused to it? I mean, I think no, but I'm just putting it out there that she's talked about the significance of experience, that experience is what's winning her this stuff. Well, there is, she's so good that there is certain stuff she actually doesn't have experience of.
Yeah, I think I agree that probably not, but she said something, didn't she, in her press conference today about how losses linger for her. You know, she feels losses. But I mean, I think partly because she doesn't have that many of them. I think when she does lose one of those big matches for the first time, it could rock her a little bit. But I wouldn't expect it to sort of completely derail her career trajectory.
No. She's at least the way she comes across to me in the press conferences, and I haven't been to that many of them, but I watched all of that press conference of hers today.
Are you banned from them, David?
yeah, after last year. Anyway, no, I'm not. But I went to the whole thing today, and she just seems to have such a healthy outlook on the sport and on life, really. As much as she wants it, she seems to have that perfect balance between really, really wanting it, not assuming it, and being okay in a way. I don't know. I mean, she just said, like you said, they linger. So it's so hard to read. Well, which is it? Which one is she? And what I love about her, I love a lot of things about her as a tennis player, and I really like the person that we're getting to know. But I feel that there's so much more to understand about her. I just feel she's such a layered person. There's so much there that we don't even know about yet.
She's only 23 years old, and she said today that her goal, or one of them, she says, hopefully I'll play long enough to play a girl that once said that I was her favourite player. That's how the sport moves forward. Which is, I mean, that made my heart sing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if that's the case, then she's going to have to linger for, I mean, a good decade.
Oh, decade, I don't know.
More, which isn't that long in tennis terms now.
When I think of players coming along now, I mean, we've got Coco Gauff playing the game at 16 and she came along at 15. I think, you know, there are going to be players that are 13 right now that are going to just be idolising her already. I really believe that. And I don't think it'll take long at all. And I think that players that are already making their tentative steps, the likes of Gauff and others that are 17, they're going to end up looking at Osaka the way Osaka looks at Serena, and the way lots of fellow players, you know how sometimes Federer plays and the whole of the tennis backstage scene, they just go giddy, you know, the other players in the locker room, they're just suddenly all tweeting about, oh, he's my favorite and all this sort of thing. She's going to be that to a lot of players, I think.
Oh, well, let's hope she's around for a decade or more.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be good.
It would.
But yeah, that was a lovely line nestled among so many lovely lines for Osaka. She said, just on the sort of what each of her Grand Slams stands for and means, sort of both to her and in the wider picture, she said, I got really scared when I won in New York. She said, it put me in this light, this non-athletic light that I've never been in before. I only like to talk about subjects that I'm really knowledgeable about, and I started being asked about all sorts of things and I didn't feel confident. For me, this tournament was all about tennis.
What I loved about that was the question was how, I can't remember the exact wording, but she was really appreciative of the question.
Yeah, he said, is there anything you'd like this win to stand for? Is there anything bigger than the tennis you'd like this win to stand for? And she said, yeah, she acknowledged, she said, I'm really pleased you've acknowledged what that last win stood for. But this one, I think, is all about the tennis. Mm. And goodness, I'm excited to know what the next one
And can
will stand
I also
for.
Say, I feel like the Brady run to the final is an extraordinary feat, given that she was the player that went through the whole 2 weeks in hard quarantine.
Absolutely.
I just find it incredible what she managed to do there,
mentally
and physically. I mean, we've seen how many players had physical issues with abdominal muscle pulls, and she looks just the most well-conditioned athlete. She looks like she just puts so much effort into orchestrating her schedule so that everything's right all the time, and just a great professional. But mentally, it's such a strain. I mean, I know this is, it's not an equivalent in any way, but I'm sitting here in a Holiday Inn at the moment in Manchester, and I'm coming up to 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks tomorrow since I moved in here, and the only time I leave this room is to go and commentate for a few hours in the BBC building, or I might go a walk. That's it. Now, that's nothing compared to the hard quarantine that people are doing, returning Australian residents and lots of people around the world. We heard from John Millman about it. But you can find yourself getting a bit stressed out. Even in this room, I find myself, my mind wandering. I'm not necessarily that focused. I feel pretty lethargic, fatigued, sort of part of that's the sort of slight jet lag of our shift starting at six in the morning, you know, and waking up in the middle of the night to watch tennis. That's my own fault. But but I did think I would really find that hard. I would find it hard. Now, a lot of people say, oh, you haven't got anything else to worry about. All you're doing is watching tennis or playing tennis. I am saying I would find it hard. I know I would. So the fact that she weathered that and still ended up coming through the draw. That's really something, that.
She didn't have a co-presenter's puppy chewing through cables and making her have to redo all of her day's work, though, did she? Low point, are we at the laughing stage yet? Are we ready to laugh about that? Matt seems ready.
Are we ready to laugh about that?
Okay.
This might be the moment.
What are we, 29 minutes in? Should we call it a podcast?
she disabled her Netflix account.
Yeah.
Jennifer Brady. in order that she wasn't lured away from her disciplined regime. She had a treadmill and a bike in her room. And she didn't trust herself to only watch one episode of something on Netflix. I mean, that's all of us, isn't it? So she thought best to disable it altogether, so you're not up at 3 o'clock in the morning watching episode 8 of some true crime documentary.
Do we know what she did apart from exercising? I mean, you know, did she...
FaceTime, she said. Oh. She said she spent a lot of time on FaceTime with the other players in hard quarantine,
oh.
I think. Mm. They formed a little community, I think, to get them through it, which was nice, I thought.
A bit like the podcast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking. And I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
The big question with Osaka now is the portion of the season that's coming up. I know there's Miami. I don't think she's verbally confirmed, but we expect her to play Miami, don't we, if not any of the events preceding that. And then it's clay, and then it's grass. And by her own admission, she's performed pretty badly on those surfaces in the past. She casually said in press today, well, I never played juniors, so I've never played on grass. You know, she never even played junior Wimbledon, or she had no formative experience on that surface. She would have played a bit on clay. There's no question that she has played the vast majority of her tennis on hard courts, and that's what her game is built for. She was asked when she would like her next slam to come. Would you like it to be at the French Open or at Wimbledon? Because those are surfaces you haven't conquered yet. And she said, well, I hope it's on clay because that's sooner. Which was amazing.
Which is a perfectly fair enough answer and absolutely the right one, isn't it?
Yeah. I do remember 2 years ago when she went into Roland Garros, she was putting a lot of pressure on herself. She was really talking about how much she wanted to win the calendar slam.
God.
You know, and she was on this incredible unbeaten streak at majors, which she'll be on again because she's done the same thing, winning the US Open and then the Australian Open going into Roland Garros. But it really does strike me how little she has played on those two surfaces, especially since she became the player she is now. She's only really had one season on the clay and on the grass since she became a Grand Slam champion, because last season she didn't play on either. She said it's all about feeling comfortable, which I think is absolutely it, isn't it? I mean, the more comfortable she gets in life, it seems, the better her tennis gets. And the more comfortable she is on a surface, the better her tennis can get. I think the movement, as we said yesterday, is so crucial for both of those surfaces for her. That Roland Garros result that we mentioned 5 years ago, she pushed Halep to three sets on clay. She can play on clay. I have no real doubt about that. It's just a question of how well she can. Grass, there's just so little to go on, but she's got some weapons that should work on the grass. I hope she gives herself a bit more time. I mean, I know, I love that answer about Roland Garros is next. I hope it's that. But realistically, I wouldn't be expecting her to win Roland Garros or Wimbledon this year. But I think in time, she probably can adapt her game to suit them.
I got the impression she's putting pressure on herself to do a lot better at Roland Garros and Wimbledon, but not necessarily win them. She doesn't like that those are sort of glaring weak spots in her year and in her calendar. She said, you know, obviously bigger picture, you know, she was asked about Mats Wilander saying she could win 10 Grand Slams. And she said, yeah, of course I want to win 10, but I'll focus on winning the next one first. You know, she's not playing down the big picture, but equally, she said, my goal is to be consistent this year and not have a big drop off in June and July like I usually do. I love the way she says usually, like there's sort of 15 years worth of data to go on. She's talking about sort of one time 2 years ago. But yeah, I think she doesn't want to have the ebbs and flows so much of the season. She doesn't want to have so many ups and downs. She's prepared for some. She knows that that's life and that's tennis. She shut down any suggestion that she could go the season unbeaten. She said, I just don't think that's possible. Tennis is too much about ups and downs. It's kind of too fundamental to the sport and the life of being on tour. But she doesn't want to have the big down. She doesn't want to have that big kind of vacuum in her CV that she has done on clay and grass previously. So it's kind of a mixture of pressure and not pressure. It's going to be fascinating. Do you think she'll go to Eastbourne?
I tell you, I believe that Naomi Osaka at the French Open and at Wimbledon is the most interesting story in tennis for this year. I mean, a lot of people would point to Serena Williams trying to still get 24 at Wimbledon, the return of Roger Federer. Obviously, those are huge stories that kind of transcend tennis. But for those of us within the sport itself, my fascination is probably more with Osaka trying to adapt and conquer. And I believe that she is good enough. I really do. I mean, I'm not saying this year either. I don't think there's a need to expect that. But I also wouldn't put it past her, because she's that good. She's that good an athlete. She's that good a competitor. She's that good just in terms of the strokes. I mean, I'm very interested to see which one of them she adapts to better. A lot of people I heard, I think we might have talked about it, certainly said they think clay should be an easier adaptation. I don't think so. I think she should be brilliant on grass once she just settles down and believes in it, because what's that different between her game and Serena Williams' game in order for her to be successful? She should be all right.
Well, she said clay. I think maybe that's why.
Well, she's a better judge
than
me.
That's based on so little data on grass, isn't it? But I don't know. Can it just click on grass? You get so little time. You know, she's not going to go and do a training block on grass, is she? So basically, she's looking at playing, let's say, Birmingham and sort of just figuring it out that week in time for...
It's not that different anymore.
Tell that to Karolina Pliskova or Stefanos Tsitsipas or Stan Wawrinka.
I know, but she's different. Her stroke production is different to theirs. And I'd look at her stroke production being more like Novak Djokovic's. In terms of movement, though. Yeah, but she's a brilliant mover.
She is, but
I don't see that it will be a problem. I know she hasn't done it yet, but I really think it's coming.
I certainly think she's absolutely capable of it and will do it. It is such a short season. I don't think she's just going to rock up and it suddenly be there. And, you know, what, so you get four matches in Birmingham and then you're into Wimbledon? Unless she goes to Eastbourne, which I'm pleased Naomi Osaka play Eastbourne. I love it when superstars go to Eastbourne. There's something so just quaint about it.
And often so do they.
What do you think?
What do you think, Matt? What do you think, Catherine? What are you predicting for Naomi Osaka at the French Open and Wimbledon?
Oh, God.
Will she win either?
No, I don't think she'll win either. I agree that there's certainly the potential for her with time to conquer those surfaces. I think part of the equation is as well that there are more players who are really comfortable on those surfaces. Mm. You know, Świątek, Halep, Barty. She's not able to distance herself from them in the same way that she is on a hard court, I think. I mean, another storyline is Andreescu. How does she get on those surfaces? We've not seen her on them either, really. I think the serve is a good foundation for the grass. She didn't actually serve very well in her last two matches at this tournament, and yet she still won it. But if she can get that serve going, that's going to be a big confidence boost. On grass in particular, I just think it's as much about her, well, in her own words, becoming comfortable. And I think that will take time. I think it will take matches. But I do believe she'll get there and she has the game. I just don't think she can click her fingers and make it happen, partly because there's too many other very strong players as well.
Mm. She's just going to have to go to Eastbourne. There's nothing else for it. And stay in a lovely, lovely B&B on the front there by the pier.
Creaking floorboards.
Yep. Can hear everything the person in the next room says. One of those places that has a sink in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Like your grandma's house. That's what I stayed in when I went to Eastbourne.
What have been the recent superstars in Eastbourne appearances? Serena's been. Djokovic has been.
Murray went to play... singles. He played doubles there. He had the very unfortunate bad date with Marcelo Melo in Eastbourne.
What was that?
Didn't he? After he won Queens with Lopez.
Mm. Oh yes, he played with Melo.
Yeah, he went to Eastbourne and had a terrible date.
And Andy Roddick won the title there, didn't he?
Yeah,
remember that?
Eastbourne has seen some things, Matt. It's a lovely event. I mean, I got really lucky the year I covered it and there was a heat wave and it was just glorious. I can imagine it's fully miserable in bad weather, but I loved it.
It's often nice weather. I've covered it a few times as well. I love it too. It's so different.
So that's the future for Naomi Osaka. What do you think, David? Is she going to win one of those this year? You don't have to say which one. Will she win either the French or Wimbledon in 2021?
Yes.
Catherine?
I think probably not this year. Will Jennifer Brady, win a slam, David? While I've got your neck on the block, head on the block, neck on the line. Both of those.
No.
You look like you've nodded off, David.
I'm just thinking. It's my thinking face.
Did you just say no very quietly?
I did say no.
Okay. Matt?
I think I agree with David on Jenny Brady.
Jenny Brady. We'll just interchangeably use all three until the situation is cleared up. Barbara Krejcikova and Rajiv Ram beat Sam Stosur and Matt Ebden 6-1-6-4 in the mixed doubles final. So Rajiv Ram is on for the doubles double. Your partner Joe Salisbury in the men's doubles final tomorrow against Ivan Dodig, Filip Poliszek. I don't think the double-double gets done very often.
I do like watching him play doubles. I think Salisbury and Ram, they're a really good partnership.
Really, really good partnership,
so dynamic.
Yeah. I just love watching his Pete Sampras serve. It's total carbon copy of Pete Sampras.
You like watching it. I just sit there mesmerised.
In a 90s trance. He closes his eyes and he pretends Pete's back.
I'm in a 90s trance for hours.
we have just a few remaining minutes to look ahead to the men's final tomorrow. Daniil Medvedev against Novak Djokovic. I was asked yesterday, I did an appearance on Times Radio, and just at the very end, when sort of, you know, Oscar's speech style, the out, music was playing, I was off very quickly to tell them what was going to happen in the two finals, and the women's one was very easy. I said, look, Osaka, overwhelming favourite. And then I came on to the men's and I said, look, we're eight-time champion, never lost a final. I mean, obviously you've got to go Djokovic, but I sort of think Medvedev, bye. I mean, it was a little bit more professional than that, but something made me sort of knee-jerk and go, you know, I said all the things about how you can't pick against Djokovic in a final in the Rod Laver Arena. You just can't. And then, I don't know, something overtook me. And I think form. I told the listeners Medvedev was going to win it. And that's very silly. But
in form and feel, really, isn't
it? Yeah.
Because he is the player on the run.
Mm. And yet I would counter that by saying, how many times have we gone into a Grand Slam final saying that someone is in the better form and they've run into Novak Djokovic and they've either not been able to quite produce that form or Djokovic has found another gear and won anyway. It feels like most of the times Djokovic has won a Grand Slam, that is kind of how we're talking.
I have total confidence in Medvedev to produce the form. I think it's a question of whether Djokovic can find that 17-time Grand Slam champion gear that is superior to Medvedev's top gear. I don't think we've seen it yet this tournament. He's brilliant at managing matches and managing tournaments and only bringing out those gears when they're required. So it's going to be very interesting to see whether it comes out tomorrow, because I really back Medvedev to show up in the way that we've seen for the past 20 matches. I do think that Medvedev will show up.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is probably Djokovic's most dangerous opponent he could possibly have drawn in the final, on such a confident winning streak with a Grand Slam final experience already under his belt in which he played well. A decent head-to-head record against Djokovic. He's won three of their last four. There's just part of backing against Djokovic in an Australian Open final, Grand Slam final, I just find so difficult to do. I think the ATP Finals meeting was interesting because it was very tight for six games. And then Djokovic looked to me like he couldn't really dig deep at the ATP Finals with Medvedev. And he didn't tank, but he didn't go to his deepest depths to try and stay with him. And I just think he will do that tomorrow when he needs to. Medvedev likes to hone in on people's weaknesses. Well, if Djokovic is playing well, where are those weaknesses that you hone in on? I think we might see Djokovic deploy some of his variety, which is underrated. I think he'll use the slice backhand. He'll use some drop shots.
Try and lure Medvedev into the net?
Yeah, I think that would be probably a good tactic for him, and one he will have to use.
What if Medvedev does his own luring?
Well, Djokovic is a better volleyer.
He is. But Medvedev's passes can be so good, it doesn't matter how good a volleyer you are.
I do agree with Matt, though. I think the short ball angled across, I mean, I actually feel like Medvedev is brilliant with his hands low down.
It's just getting that low.
on a half volley where he's able to do a full swing through, his control is incredible. And he paints the lines with those shots. So whether or not he ends up having volleys to play, I don't know. But if Djokovic can make him hit volleys, I think Djokovic is in a good place there. I could foresee a long match either way, which could go like last year's, where Djokovic came back against Thiem and won it from 2-1, or Medvedev just has a little bit too much for him on the day at the end. And Djokovic, you know, I do feel like at some point Djokovic's reserves are going to deplete a little bit. His resilience is going to deplete a little bit, because how many times can you keep on doing this? And he's playing a guy 8 years younger, fresh, hungry, and very similar to himself. So it's a real knife-edge call, but I would be surprised if it doesn't go long.
That's not a prediction, David.
Well, I'm going Djokovic.
Okay.
But I don't feel confident in it.
Matt?
I'm just going Djokovic as well, 51-49. I don't think he's played particularly well in his recent Grand Slam finals. He's won two of them, beating Federer and beating Thiem in the 2019 Wimbledon final, 2020 Australian Open final. But they weren't brilliant performances. And then he was very flat against Nadal at Roland Garros. I don't know what to read into that. But it's a pattern recently. But the thing is, he's still good enough to play like that and win. So I think I just have to give the slight edge to Djokovic, but five sets.
I'm going Medvedev in five, 51-49. But, you know, that's what I said. I said pre-tournament, Medvedev to beat Djokovic in the final. I copied Pam Shriver, and I'm sticking with Pam. I'd love to know if Pam is sticking with Pam.
Yeah. What do you think, Pam? Pam's been listening to most
Pam
of them.
Because if Pam has jumped ship, Pam, and I'm just in Pam's ship on my own.
Pam's been working for ESPN because they're in Connecticut, aren't they, doing the broadcasting from there. And she says she's listening to most of them on the minibus in. So hello, Pam.
Right. Right. Okay. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Pam.
Actual Pam Shriver.
Actual Pam Shriver. Should we also say hello to Crumble?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right,
Crumble is our Australian Open mascot. I hope you're having a good one, Crumble. Hope you're not chewing through anything. Should we say hello to our mascots? Mine is Zeus. We had a good day, Zeus. We should have got more points for that. We should get some sort of bonus pot for getting the game score right, but it doesn't work like that. We'll just take the moral victory, Zeus.
Yeah, well, you and me, Rogue, we might have to go Medvedev in three just to stand a chance, whether or not we believe it or not. But I think we've got more about us than that. I think we're happy to accept fourth place out of fifth, just
well,
for getting it
as
right.
Of yesterday, the bookies' odds were completely even. So
they now have Djokovic as a slight favourite.
Okay, so Medvedev in three probably is your ticket to the points galore, David.
I have a 59-point lead over Daryl, and the
Daryl that predicted France to win the ATP Cup.
Yeah, that Daryl. You are below him, I'm afraid, Catherine.
I know.
By the way, Matt just gets that out there. I've got a 59-point lead over Daryl,
but the most amount of points available is 60. So it's possible that I could still not win, which I'm annoyed about.
Right. Matt was looking for mathematical.
This is actually quite exciting.
He wants mathematical certainty and he can't
have it.
This
is a real sprint finish for some of us.
Some of us are just looking for a consolation goal.
Yeah. As I said, though, Zeus, moral victory is ours. So sign up to the newsletter if you want to follow that sprint finish. Sign up anyway because it's great. If you think the stats that Matt comes out with in the podcast are good, he saves his best one usually for the newsletter. There's some Billie Jean King diva content in the most recent one. There's sort of a photo.
Billie Jean.
What did I say?
Billie Jean King, didn't you?
There's so many of them.
Sorry about that, Billie Jean King, actual legend. Yeah.
Genuine apologies to Billie Jean King, because you do not want to be associated with this puppy at the moment that's disgraced herself.
We should say, at the end of last night's show, we thought it was a phone cable that she'd eaten her way through. Turned out it was the actual podcast cable.
Yeah, it was all quite funny for a while there, wasn't it? And then then it got, and then David's
got
face
dark.
Went ashen.
Stop talking to you for about 4 hours.
I have pledged to be 100% nice to David for a 24-hour period in apology, and that ends at 4:07 p.m. today.
Yeah, correct.
Mm. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King. Did you hear that, Billie Jean? That means buck up your ideas. And our executive producer is Chris Albert Lee, who is a confirmed top bloke.
Have you chosen your quiz, your competition winner yet, Catherine, from Instagram stories?
I'm still browsing the entrance.
Because the mug has arrived. You've seen a picture of the mug? Yeah, have a look at the picture of the mug later.
I mean, this is an audio platform. I don't think me looking at a mug is going to play that well.
Yeah,
but you don't mean now.
Okay, Matt, what does the Tennis Podcast official mug look like to you?
It looks exactly as you would describe. It looks amazing. It is black with the Tennis Podcast logo on. It even has the fade. What's the official word for that?
The gradient.
That's the word I was looking for.
The swooshing ball. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Looks amazing.
We will have other competitions available for non-pet owners, just in case we get accused of discrimination. I mean, obviously we are discriminatory towards pet owners. Unashamedly, I am. But we will run competitions that are open to non-pet owners. Matt, who are our shout-outs for today?
They are for Tristan, who I think is Tristan Bulas.
Oh, Tristan's a top bloke.
Who regularly writes to us.
Oh, hello, Tristan. Of, like, Tristan and his old. It's like, you know, Romeo and Juliet type story from medieval times. Forbidden love, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Tristan. You're a great bloke. Always sending us nice little notes.
Oh, thanks, Tristan.
Moritz Guth.
Oh, hello.
Moritz. What a great name that is.
That is the name of Dominic Thiem's brother.
Yeah.
It is.
Cheers, Moritz.
Is Moritz Thiem still trying to make it? I don't know.
No, I think he's trying less than the other Tsitsipas.
Right, okay. Okay.
Is that the meanest thing I've ever said?
That's the bar. Okay. Yep.
And finally, Tiffany Horan.
Oh, hello, Tiffany.
Hi, Tiffany.
Like Niall Horan of One Direction fame. And exactly. Tiffany of, well, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah. Isn't that a shop as well?
Tiffany's, yeah.
Isn't it like really posh with lots of expensive things?
Yes.
I've never been in there.
Jewellery.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, Tiffany, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tiffany. There is a song called Breakfast at Tiffany's, just putting that out there.
Yes. Oh, and by the way, I did have one note from a listener today who's only just started listening to us because was put onto us by a friend who and said, oh, could I have a shout out for my friend because he's got me into the podcast? And I just had to explain, and I'll explain to anybody else who's only just started listening to us during the Australian Open. The shout outs, we don't just sort of randomly pick them. They're part of our crowdfunding campaign at the end of each year. And so it closed in January, but we'll have another one in December in which you can get a shout out and show your support for the podcast in the process, if you like.
You can buy yourself the opportunity to have Matt sing your name.
Yeah. In fact, that might have to be an elevated category.
Yeah. David's having an idea. Better wrap this thing now. We'll be back with one last Australian Open 2021 Daily Tennis Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed them. If you have, then tell your friends, leave us an iTunes review. Do subscribe to our newsletter. I know I keep going on about it, but it's great stuff. And we'll be back with one more tomorrow. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.